introduce our main speaker. Josh S. from Redondo Beach.
Hi, guys. I'm Josh, alcoholic.
Hi, Josh.
And you did great. And I could have left right after that. But unfortunately, I was driving up here and I was thinking, all right, maybe an asteroid hit the church. And it's just going to be a crater when I pull up. But here I am. You know, I'm from the Hermosa Beach Men's Stag up in Hermosa Beach, California, South Bay, on Monday night at 8:30, if you're ever around. My sponsor always says, Hermosa Beach Men's Stag, where the men are men and the sheep are scared. And we know how to laugh, you know, and we carry a message with depth and weight, but we don't take ourselves too seriously. And I'll get to that. You'll hear all about my seriousness and sobriety.
I knew everything, you know.
And I knew how you should stay sober and how you should read the book and what you should interpret the words as, you know. And I wasted a lot of time worshiping the finger instead of turning to see what it was pointed to, you know. So, it's like enlightenment, right? The people searching for enlightenment, they stop at the road sign that says, enlightenment this way. And they just look at the road sign, you know, and they set up a church around it and all this stuff. And they're like, you know, here we go. I was born in an alcoholic family. I don't know if anyone else here was. I'm probably the only one. But, you know, Dad got dishonorable discharge from the Navy for selling coke on the on the aircraft carrier, and got kicked out of med school. But right before he was getting ready to get somewhere with it, and his internship as an EMT for lifting morphine off of the ambulances. So anyway, I grew up like that, you know, and. And mom left I talk about this in the only, I'm going to talk about my childhood just a little bit. For one thing, I'm 27 years old. My sobriety date is July 1st, 2003. And I was ready to die at 18 and a half years old when I got into Alcoholics Anonymous. I'd already tried killing myself once. And I was just deluded, and I was suffering from a seemingly hopeless state of mind and body. And I, too, thought I was broken. And I was, you know. But I was broken only in the way the view of a world through a shattered mirror is broken. In actuality, I wasn't broken, and I've learned that through the 12 steps, is that from the neck up, I'm broken, you know. But there's a lot more to a human being than its mind. And so, that being said, growing up, In the household, you know, abusive. My dad hit my mom. The stakes got pulled in the middle of the night, and we moved in. Next thing I knew, we were with Milton Buster Prescott from Montana, son of a gunsmith, tech sergeant in the Air Force, youth pastor at the church. I'm 4 years old. We're at church three times a week. The grass in the front yard looks like golf green. I'm sorry, hearing the echo, doesn't it mess you up? Like when you're talking to someone on the phone, you can hear yourself still talking. You're like, you just sound like you're apoplectic. But so anyway, if I pause suddenly during the discourse, just, you know, it's because of the echo that's slapping my eardrums right now. We had this relationship with God, Bible studies in the front room, the whole nine yards, you know, but he severely beat my mother and I for 4 years, you know, and I got knocked unconscious, heard her being abused in the other room, you know, dishware smashed, stuff just getting pistol whipped when you're 5 years old, you know, almost getting your nose broken, getting picked up by my ankle and slammed into a wall partition. So, you know, no friends. My friends were the woods. I just wandered the woods when I was a kid. I grew up in Washington State. And I was just a lonely kid, you know, and I was looking for an answer my whole life. My whole life I was looking for something, because I knew that this subsistent existence wasn't what the great poobahs had been whispering about for, you know, the ages. I knew that there was something else out there. And growing up in that household, you know, I threw away my Bible when I was 8 years old. I didn't feel it anymore. I thought it was a lie. I had no sense of family. I had no sense of truth. I was gravely and emotionally, you know, disordered when I came here. Everything was shattered. And so I just tried to do what kids do. You know, I was crazy. And my dad came back into my life after his alcoholic absence, and we got close again, and then we got in a fight one night. I was staying at his ranch up there, and he wanted to send me back to my mom's house, and I was just, I was a kid, and I was angry, you know. I've always liked dark stuff. I write horror stories now, you know, but before that, like, I was, loved horror movies growing up, and I wanted to watch Warlock, and my dad was really not about Warlock. He's a very strong Christian, and I got so mad at him. That I didn't want to talk to him, and I left on the plane, and I didn't call him back. And 3 months later, we got a call that he was found on the side of the road dead, 0.36 alcohol level, you know, cocaine and marijuana in his system. And so I, you know, my dad died, and from there, it was just like, I was still looking for an answer, and I didn't know it was a drink. I had no idea that that's what I needed in order to survive the emotional, spiritual infirmities that I had been imbued with for whatever reason. I just felt completely ill at ease at all times. I felt like the only way for me to fit into a situation was to make fun of someone. You know? That's how I started conversations. God, this is crappy weather, isn't it? Like negative, always. You know? God, look at her. Does she know what she's wearing? You know? And, I'm Josh, by the way, you know, so that was just kind of my life, you know, negativity. And so I was this bad kid, right, getting kicked out of class all the time, threatening my mom, you know, calling her at 11 years old, calling her every four-letter word you can call a woman. And finally, I got sent away. You know, I got sent into my, they told my grandpa was having a heart attack, and we went into this really small hospital that was really understaffed, but I was only, you know, 12 years old, so I had no idea. Next thing I know, we're getting led into a hallway, and the door shuts, and I hear the deadbolt slide into it. So now I'm in a mental institution, you know, and so I did that for a while, you know, and God, I'm just such a, I used to think I was so cool, and I'm not, man. I mean, I was like, I had an eating disorder. How unmanly is that? I was a kid with an eating disorder. I wet my bed all the time, you know. I was just messed up, you know. I needed a drink, in other words. So when I was in, and don't worry, I'm about to get into drinking in a second. And then I'll get right into getting sober. But just bear with me. Then I was in this residential, medium security residential treatment center. And while I was there, fell in love with a rape victim from Texas who was 15 years old. And there was slipping poetry underneath her door. And then it's, you know, it just didn't happen. And I was shattered. And so a lot of things just, it, you know, happened. The snowball rolled downhill. And next thing I knew, I had gotten some shoelaces and tied them around the heavy hinges in this mental institution. It's a residential treatment center, so it's a little different. But the whole team was staffed by rugby players, so if you ever tried to run, it wasn't going to be good for you. They had a rugby team, you know. Yeah. Well, we're not taking care of the crazies. We're beating the crap out of each other. So, I wrapped it around these hinges and I slipped it around my neck and I pulled my ankles up to my hips and I started feeling my body just drain away. I felt the pins and needles crawling down my spine, and it didn't matter that my mom had trapped me in this mental institution, you know, and that all my friends back home were calling me psycho boy and, you know, are you going to kill the cat, Josh, and all that kind of stuff, you know. I might have, you know. And it didn't matter that my father was dead, and it didn't matter that I was beat as a kid and that no one cared about me. I just felt peace. And I either untied it or it broke. I did get kicked out of the Boy Scouts growing up, so maybe it was a faulty knot. Next thing I know, you know, and I didn't feel that kind of peace again until I had my first drink. So I just want to let you know what it did for me. All that is just to give you a little brief idea of what it did for me. And it does something special for an alcoholic that it doesn't do for a normal person. And it's the reason we will burn down our lives and the lives of everyone around us in order to chase that feeling. It is just worthwhile. It does something to me. And I believe, you know, Carl Jung said that he believed, and I'm paraphrasing, the alcoholic was on a base level search for union with his creator. And every time I took that drink, I felt the trappings and just the chains of my ego let go. And cue dramatic sound. But I felt everything just be okay, you know? And if drinking did that for you, or if whatever you did, you know, alcohol is but a symptom. Bottle is a symbol, is what it says in the book. You know, of course, singleness of purpose, I'm totally down with that. I'm just saying, if you have another problem and you're in an AA meeting, you can just say, you know, hey, I'm an alcoholic. You don't even have to be an alcoholic. Just say it, you know. Keep the old timers from getting a hemorrhoid during the... So we just want to learn how to be diplomatic, you know. Comes with time, I guess. But I went downhill really quick, you know. I started drinking and using. I remember the first time I had a drink and what it did for me. Like I said, I was sitting in a garage with Andrew Gedman, and his mom and dad were gone, and we drank vodka, and I can't remember the rest of that day, but I remember driving home feeling like the king of the world, and like nothing could touch me. And so I proceeded to chase that as hard as I could, and little did I know I was suffering from an obsession beyond my mental control. Little did I know the peculiar mental twist that comes with alcoholism. You know, it says in the book that, you know, the whole crux of the problem is the thinking that dominates an alcoholic before he takes the drink. After I've got these piles of, if you're new, I've got piles of evidence that says why I shouldn't drink, why I shouldn't use, why I shouldn't do whatever I'm about to do again. You know, last time, well, mom won't talk to me, you know, she won't talk to me. I got kicked out of this school district. I got kicked out of that school district. These people want to kick my ass. These people I owe money to. Probably shouldn't drink. Next thing I know, I'm drinking. Why? Again and again and again and again. And it took me 5 years of sobriety to finally realize that the upset. And here's the thing. I wasn't an alcoholic. Like, that's an awesome story. But I didn't, like, you know, just take a drink and all of a sudden I had a, you know, Thompson machine gun in my hands, you know, spraying, you know, across Mission Beach. It wasn't like that. It was like, for me, it was more subtle. And it was so subtle that by 5 years I realized that, man, the mental obsession for me and the physical allergy for me said as soon as I take a drink, I just change my mind. I'm gonna go, I'm just gonna have fun, I'm gonna have one, I'm gonna have a couple, I'm only staying till 10, whatever, you know, fill in the blank. Then I just changed my mind. Yeah, I was going to say because I thought this was going to be boring, you know, but this is actually kind of fun. All right, you know. She looked really bad 2 hours ago, but right about now she's looking okay, you know. So you just stay and have fun. And by the time I was 18 years old, I thought I was the incarnation of a Viking warlord. I'm not joking. I started doing some outside issues along with my alcohol, and I remember sitting there, I'd have random braids in my hair, and I'd take pictures in the woods with axes and swords and stuff, and I was played in a black metal band, and I thought that my problem boiled down to the fact that I was transplanted in time. Like, I should have, there was a confusion in the mail room upstairs, and I should have been, you know, raiding the Carolingian Empire. I should not have been here. I should have been a farmer, you know, on the outside of the fjords. So, because when you're a Viking or even pirates, whatever, you know, when you, like, you can crap your pants and no one cares, you know, they just kind of
They just kind of snort and say, oh, I crapped my pants yesterday. It's all, you know, it's all right. Keep rowing. So
I just figured, you know, I lived like that. I was kind of an animal when I got to Alcoholics Anonymous. I was like Howard Hughes without the genius, you know? I was peeing in bottles and like putting them up my windowsill and like, you know, didn't want to go to the bathroom 8 feet away outside of my door, watching Braveheart with braids in my hair, like with a sword in my lap, you know, drinking and going with, and you know, I've got a pocket full of my mom's stolen money and I'm going, God, there's just no honor in the world today. What happened to valor, you know? So to give you all an idea, I was deluded, severely deluded. And so that's what alcoholics, you know, it's not about denial necessarily. That's a rehab word, which is fine. For a while I was resentful against the rehabs, right? I got sober in a rehab, but go figure. Doesn't matter. Give me a cause and I'll give you an opinion. But... do you know how much work Bill Wilson and all those old timers had to do to get the medical community to cooperate with us and to get them to ship people here? You know, they had to do a lot of work in order to get the medical community to start cooperating with Alcoholics Anonymous and making this a solution that was actually viable. So I learned after 5 years, I had a lot of things happen at 5 years, and that was one of them, is that, you know, I need to be grateful for the fact that some of these people are given a chance of being carted here by these buses and not make them feel unwelcome in Alcoholics Anonymous. This is a safe place, and you're all welcome here. So I got, by the end of that, boom, okay, I'm just out of my mind. I get shipped up to this place called New Life House, and I decide I'm going to do it for 30 days. I go and see these guys talk, and they're all talking about, you know, me and my mom have a great relationship today, you know, and like, I've got a job at Taco Bell, and I show up every day, and the other's like, I make my bed every morning, and I'm just like, these guys are tools, if I've ever seen tools, you know, where's the toolbox, fitness, and so I decide, okay, I'll try this, right? My mom found a busted glass implement in my pocket, and that the eighth one couldn't possibly have belonged to the neighbor boy, you know? So I finally decided to try this thing, and I got sent up there, and these guys, you know, it was like, sit down, shut up. If you don't want sobriety, there's the front door. We don't lock it at night, you know? And they told me stuff like, you don't know, you may know a lot. I dropped out of high school when I was in 11th grade, and I just read all the time, you know, and I write now, but like everything I learned, I kind of learned myself. And so I prided myself on that when I got sober. And when I came in here, I'd meet people and I'd just be thinking, you're just such an idiot, you know? You just were born without any common sense. What I'm going to do is I'm going to find a time machine and a coat hanger. And I'm going to go back in time and give it to your parents. And that's kind of how I used to talk to people, you know? And when I came into Alcoholics Anonymous, I'm just sorry, I'm not bragging. This is just seriously, if you could see me today, if you want to talk to my mother, if you want to talk to my family who's proud of me, if you want to talk to the people who trust me to call them sponsor, the employers that pay me every single week to show up and trust me to do a job, if you want to talk to my neighbors or talk to the community that I'm a part of today, they will not believe the stories I'm telling you right now. Why? Because Alcoholics Anonymous has taken this chewed, you know, a remnant of a human being and turned him into something that's all AA. It's not me. You know, anonymity for me is me coming up here and letting you guys know it's not just to protect me from being labeled an AA. It's to protect AA from me. Anonymity is for me to efface myself in the presence of a movement that is much greater than myself. And so what I'm trying to say here tonight is that this isn't me having the Josh show-off story. I genuinely hope some of my experience can benefit you. It's the only way I can be up here and not be nervous. This was all about me trying to pump up my status in Alcoholics Anonymous. You know, I would be sweating. I would be nervous. But it's not about me. So I just was mean to people constantly. And I was like, it talks about, I swelled myself up with my intellect and floated over my fellows, you know, in the privacy of my own heart. I just thought, I guess I'll do this, sure. Okay, I'll genuflect with the rest of you peons for a little bit. And what ended up happening to me is I had a little dose of humility, and I had to learn how to ask for help. The first 90 days of my sobriety, I didn't wash my own laundry. I just washed it in the sink because I'd never done it before. Tough guy Viking that I was. My mother was still doing my laundry, you know? So I just didn't know how to do anything. I didn't know how to ask for help. I didn't know how to live. I didn't know what a bank account was or what work really was or anything like that. You know, I dropped out of high school. I was an animal. I urinated outside more than I used a bathroom. And that's why I still love camping. You know, I grew up in Washington. It's just like the whole world's a bathroom. It's great. But I got a sponsor, and I remember we sat down and what do I go until 10 till? Yeah? And we were doing the third step prayer. And he sat down with me and he said, "Are you ready?" And we were on the beach. And this guy I didn't have anything in common with at all. He was a jock in high school. He was appointed to me because at 6 months in this house, I still wouldn't want a sponsor. And we were sitting there and I thought, huh, maybe if I have a sign, right? The arrogant alcoholic or human being in that, for that matter. Maybe if I have a sign. And I sat there and it was quiet and there was no one on there. And then all of a sudden, I hear someone scream. And they jumped off of this. There was no one on the beach, seriously. And they jumped out of the lifeguard tower. And then a V of seagulls cut across the horizon right in front of me. And I was like, all right. You know? Okay. I guess that's enough sign. Let's do it, you know? And I proceeded to stumble through Alcoholics Anonymous, you know, learn how to show up for work and then lie to work, get a treasury commitment in AA and then steal all of the money, all of it, you know, and then try, and then all of a sudden I realize my commitment's about to be up, and I'm like, so I pull out some savings and I fill it up just to where it needs to be. I make false donations and then I go there and pass off the kitty. And then I get to make amends for it a year later when you feel really guilty and you don't want to drink. And you get to stand up in front of the meeting and say, what can I do to make this right? And the only reason I so firmly believe in Alcoholics Anonymous today is because I seriously have tried every loophole to try to live a dishonest life while gaining the spiritual benefits. I tried doing that my first 2.5 years of sobriety. But for the grace of God, you know, I luckily stayed sober. I believe it's a whole lot of luck. You know, there are some things that we have to do, but man, there's some things that some people, if you're constitutionally incapable of being honest with yourself, there's nothing we can do for you. And it was not until I was absolutely hopeless that hope found me. It was not until I was absolutely out of ideas that someone stepped into my life and was willing to guide me, and I was just willing enough to listen. And at 5 years sober, like I said, I knew everything. I was with this group of people. We had the big book. We were using it as a divisional tool to separate the dry drunks from the ones who are really working the steps. You know, you old timers have gotten lazy. This is how we're doing it. We're in the trenches. You know, we're going and buying them tall boys. We're shaking up orange juice and honey to get these guys to stop shaking. He's vomiting on the inside of my car. We're working with the wet ones. Doing soul surgery. And so what ended up happening at that is it got huge. And we had a patriarch. And this patriarch started barking orders. And inside of me, I'm just rebellious by nature. But it just started, I outgrew the relationship. He taught me a lot. The guy taught me a lot. But it became unhealthy for me. And it became unhealthy for a lot of other people in AA who saw it as this rift. Who saw it as this schism. I know the answer and you don't. And that's such a danger in Alcoholics Anonymous, is it moving towards dogma, you know, and telling people that they're wrong constantly. I'll tell you what, I had to be wrong before I could be right. It is only by discovering what I am not that I have moved closer to understanding what I am. And so you have to make your own mistakes in Alcoholics Anonymous, and hopefully you make them with a sponsor. And hopefully you make them with a crew of friends that you talk to before you tell your sponsor anything, right? My sponsor's always the last to know. He's like, "Oh, I already heard about that." Like, really? And it's important for me to not beat the crap out of myself, you know? And if no one's given you permission to be kind, I'm giving you permission to be kind. It's all right to be kind in Alcoholics Anonymous. You don't have to be standoffish, you know. You don't have to be intimidated by the different seeming cliques in AA. This is a safe place. And you're just as important as I am. And just as unimportant as I am. And I've had some ego-shattering experiences in Alcoholics Anonymous. I have gotten and fallen in love, and then on my fourth year birthday, the girl doesn't show up to give me a cake at our home group, and I'm speaking that night because she's out drinking. You know? Get the heart, go to Al-Anon, bring back, try to date the newcomer girl, you know? Every time we're at the meeting, I'm sitting there and I'm like, someone says something really important, you know? I'm like, I'm looking at her to make sure she was watching, you know? Like, that was important. If you want to stay sober, maybe you should be listening to that. And becoming her sponsor and her higher power and all the nine. And then feeling the pain of that, the emptiness of that. And in that, but you know what I've learned in Alcoholics Anonymous is that when a heart breaks, it breaks open. And that it only holds more love after that. And if we can learn from that and move on, you know, it's nothing happens by mistake. I do not believe in non-causality or whatever. I just think that this is what I think. Okay, getting crazy. It's not even what I think. This what resonates with me is that me and you are connected completely, 100%. We've never not been connected. And it is only the presence of the ego that separates me from you. And with an alcoholic, this heightened sense of self, 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 self. It's what it says in the book over and over again. Self is the nature of the problem. Selfishness, self-centeredness, you know, self-centered fear, which translates to, I am the piece of shit the universe revolves around. You know? So, self, 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 self. My sponsor taught me that I believe that there is the universe and then there is me. There is no universe and me. There is just the universe. There is just God. And we're all a part of that. We've always been a part of that. And the reason I'm allowed to suffer so often is because I forget that and I view myself as separate from. As not a part of this divinity that's all around us. And there are several worlds and they're all seen through each of your eyes. And what is the book talks about a new pair of glasses, right? And like I said earlier, that mirror that shattered. I can call the world shattered because I'm looking at a shattered mirror, you know. Or I can change my perception. Everything what's happened to me is my perception has been changed. I have abandoned myself to the idea of Alcoholics Anonymous and been a little willing to try what's here at 18 years old, right? And my life has been transformed as a result of it. I was this kid who came in here long hair, playing in a black metal band, Satanist, carving myself up, had, you know, upside down crosses and pentagrams, I carved with razor blades into my body, you know, made my own religion, one member, but I was working on it. I was proselytizing. It just wasn't catching on yet. But I had my own code I wrote in, and I had my own alphabet. I thought I was like this Da Vinci, like I said, and I was studying demonology, and I thought I was a Viking. I mean, I was out of my mind. And I got into Alcoholics Anonymous, you know, and I remember the first time I had a job, and I slept in the car, you know, because I didn't want to be late. I had a problem with waking up, and so when I'd stay out late to go to that meeting, I'd show up in front of the job, and I'd sleep in the car with a blanket. You know, because he wanted to show up because someone in AA gave me a chance to have that job and I had no experience and I just didn't want to mess it up. As a result of showing up to Alcoholics Anonymous, learning how to show up to the meeting on time and leave the meeting when it ends, you know, stay from prayer to prayer is what my old sponsor used to say. I've learned how to show up for a job. You know, as a result of having commitments to show up for, I've learned how to show up for doctor's appointments or call and tell someone I can't make it when I'm not going to. As a result of having a treasurer commitment, you know, I learned that there's only a certain amount of money you can spend before you go into the negative. You know, I don't know when the government's going to catch on, but, you know, maybe I'm just joking. This is my segment on politics and religion. Let's move on. No. Alcoholics Anonymous has taught me everything I know. And, you know, today I'm a business owner and I'm chasing my dreams. And I've got a beautiful girlfriend that I love, and we share this way of life together. And she wanted me to tell you that I am an a-hole sometimes. And I remember when we get in a fight, she'd be like, why don't you share about that next time you're at the podium, you know? So I hope you can get one with some fire in her, like I've got one. And my sponsor taught me that you can have it all. You can't go. You don't have to go to 6,000 meetings a year, you know, and then not have a job because you're afraid you're going to drink. You can have a job. You can have a family. You know, you can make amends and pay back the money. I've done that, you know, and gone and made the emotional amends and asked the people if there's anything I could do to make it right, that I had never had any right to treat them like that. What can I do? Not, hey, I'm here, it's part of my sober thing. You've probably seen that show, Earl, right? You know? Anyway, well, I got to do this because my sponsor says if I don't, I'll drink. A.K.A., I don't even care about this. I'm just going to come up and pretend to apologize to you. But really to amend something, to change completely, to ameliorate it, and to be a different person. And I only get to become a different person by what Juan said. Was it Juan? It took 5 years? Yeah. You know, about the spiritual experience. We hear in Alcoholics Anonymous all the time that he's an alcoholic, he drinks, that's what he does. We drink, that's what we do. Absent a spiritual experience, that's what we do. But I'll tell you what, you get that spiritual awakening that's promised as a result of just an honest attempt at trying the steps, taking the steps with someone else who's done it before you. And there is no statistic on God. You do not have to look to your left and to your right and say that AA has lost its edge and that one of you isn't going to be here come next year. All of you can be here come next year. And I'm not here to spread fear. I'm here to tell you guys that there's hope and that there's a way to respect. I've found to respect alcoholism and to do rigorous work with other people and sponsor guys and try to help others recreate their lives, you know. And just lay my experience at their feet and say, look, man, I have made so many mistakes. This is what I did. This is how I got through it. You know, you can do that or you can keep on suffering. And if you keep on suffering, you probably like it that way. You know, good luck. But in Alcoholics Anonymous, I have discovered that, like I said, I'm not broken. And I've never been broken. And that God gave me everything I needed to be complete the day I was born. And our entire life, this world, everything in this world has always existed in this world. Cell phones, fiber optics, satellite dishes, all this stuff was possible a million years ago. Nothing new has come into existence on our planet. But a shift of consciousness is what was necessary in order to observe the physical laws already in motion. Someone needed to observe something that was already happening in order to get to where we are today. But it's always been there. It'll always be there. And the hope, the recovery, the solution, it's in you now. And it's always been there. And peace is there. And you can have it all. You don't have to, and it doesn't mean you don't have bad days. It doesn't mean you don't get fired from jobs or you have to declare bankruptcy or, you know, someone leaves you and says, I'm sorry, I no longer love you the way you love me. It doesn't mean you don't lose money or make mistakes or piss people off or look like an idiot. It just means that you know. There's a deeper knowledge beneath the ego and beneath everything I think I am. There's a heart knowledge that knows that God has given me another day to breathe and I've been given the gift of sobriety. And if I'm not grateful today, then I'm not looking hard enough. And there are many days like that for me. But I'm just here to let you know that Alcoholics Anonymous works. And I'm grateful that I've met so many wonderful people and I've gotten to share my life with so many people. And I was pissing my pants, you know, in this room, locked up, pissing in bottles, worshiping Satan, you know, thinking that I was going to my corpse was going to be discovered with a collection of this poetry I had been writing and that they were going to give me a posthumous Oxford collection, you know. And I was pretty certain that was going to happen. So if I can say anything, it's God damn it, just laugh at yourself. You know? Who cares? Just shut up. You know? Just laugh. So I'm an idiot, and I'm glad I got to stay sober. And I hope I get to make a lot more mistakes in here, and I get to learn a lot more, and I hope I can stay humble enough to be able to take some direction even when it's given to me, even if I think I'm in charge, you know? I just want to be one of you, and not the one. So, thank you. All right.